And they're going to talk about flu vaccination prevention in military health service, talking about new recommendations for a new group. Dr. Marshall is a senior healthcare analyst at TRICARE Management Activity Defense Health Cost Assessment and Program Evaluation. She is responsible for several key areas of the military health system, including support to military health system leadership through population health surveys and program evaluations. I think she may also tell you a little bit about TRICARE TMA. And Sarah Godby is a senior consultant at Deloitte working on military health system. Thank you.
All right, we are really excited to be here today, and I looked through the brochure. I didn't see a lot of information about the military healthcare system, so we're really thrilled that we're able to talk about it, and I don't know, by a raise of hands, how many people are familiar with Department of Defense TRICARE? Okay, oh, good, quite a bit. Okay, wonderful. So I don't have to talk about it, no. Okay, let's see, how do I scroll to the next one?
Just left click on the mouse.
So we were supposed to read this to you. We don't have any relationships to discuss. We don't have any financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation within the last 12 months. Okay. Right, Sarah? Okay. So let's just talk about TRICARE a little bit. And we really, our boss is Health Affairs. And Health Affairs is an organization that actually sets policy. TMA, TRICARE Management Activity, that organization actually executes the policy that is directed. So this is pretty amazing. TRICARE, it's a healthcare benefit, and it's for active duty retirees, active duty dependents, retirees dependents. We also have some reservists. So it's got a lot of people that are eligible for health care through the military health care system. In fact, there's 9.6 million beneficiaries, and it seems like that's expanding. Now there's the TRICARE Young Adult, so that if you're 23, you would have aged out of it. But if your parents are still eligible for TRICARE, then you can stay in it until you're age 26. So it just continues to expand, and it's quite a robust health plan. There are three different types of health plans that we have. We have TRICARE Prime, which is an HMO type of health care plan. And the majority of our beneficiaries are seen within the military treatment facility, in fact, 3.7 million. And then we have 1.7 million that are outside of the military treatment facility. They are contracted out within the network. We also have other plans, which is standard and extra, which is a fee-for-service type of program. If you're standard, you have to have your health care. You can have a non-network provider take care of you. And if you are extra, you have to be within the network, and there's associated costs that goes along with that. The active duty people, they must use the military treatment facility, which is the TRICARE Prime. Let me just tell you, I spent 31 years in the Navy and I retired. I had that on my little information, but just I know a little bit about retired life because I am one of those beneficiaries. And then we also have a TRICARE Reserve, which are for a reservist, and then we have TRICARE for Life. This is for those individuals who are 65 and older. TRICARE will pay a secondary to Medicare, and but you have to pay the Medicare Part B fees that are associated with that. And we have 59 hospitals throughout the world, military treatment facilities, hospitals, and medical clinics, and then we have 364 healthcare clinics that are directly under the military treatment facility. This does not explain how many we have out in the civilian sector, which is the private sector area. I just wanted to show you demographics on who we actually treat on a daily basis. And as you can see under the beneficiary category, 28% of our beneficiaries are active duty. And the majority are the active duty family members, which is at 37%, and then we have retirees and their family members. As our retirees get older, they're still within our plan, and that percentage continues to increase as we get older. And then we have the age range as well. So I just wanted to show you this quick slide that just talks about what do we do a week in the life of TRICARE. And there's lots of statistics in here. This came out of the 2011 Military Healthcare System Stakeholders Report that you can find online. But you can see there's quite a bit of numbers here. In fact, there's 18,000 inpatient admissions that we have. We have for direct care only, there's 664,000 professional outpatient encounters. We have 2,240 births on a weekly basis. So we're really excited because these are new recruits that we can, 20 years down the road, we can recruit them in the military. And we provide 2,288 million prescriptions in a week. And if you're eligible for TRICARE, the chances are in the military treatment facility, your prescriptions are free. It's part of your benefit. And outside of the military and the civilian sector, say at the CVS or Walgreens, you have to pay additional payment for your prescriptions. And then we conducted 3.7 million claims were processed in a week's basis. So I just want to talk about our TRICARE policy. This was signed out by the Assistant Secretary of Defense, Dr. Woodson, and the flu policy. He wants to make sure that all of our TRICARE beneficiaries are eligible to receive their flu vaccination. What is most important, well, I wouldn't say most important, but for active duty, for our force health protection, for our warfighter, we must ensure that our active duty people are required to have immunizations, the flu immunizations. And in our healthcare personnel, part of the contract with the hospital is you must have get a flu vaccination. As the services incorporate the policies that are set by the secretary, it is important that these services are encouraging, they continue to encourage beneficiaries to come in and get their flu shots. And if they can't be seen within the military treatment facilities, there are facilities that we have contracted out for them to have their flu shots. In fact, I noticed on flu.gov there is a website, and if you type in your zip code, it'll tell you the closest place where you can go to get a flu shot. The military has done the same thing on the website to their beneficiaries. If they type in their zip code, it will tell them the closest military treatment facility that they can provide flu shots or outside in the private sector. So it's what's important is that the goal is that 100% of our dependents have access to flu immunizations, our dependents and our retirees. And you're probably aware of this, but the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices says starting in 2010 stated that from age 6 months on up, you must have an annual flu shot. This has changed. Before it was, the previous recommendation was 50 and older. So I just wanted to talk about the survey overview. What was most important? Our force health protection asked us, we'd like to know how many people within our system report that they have had the flu, so we found that out. They also wanted to know, what about the attitudes and behaviors of our beneficiaries? Why are they seeking out the flu shot, or what are the barriers against them obtaining this? And then also we wanted to just look at if there were targeted populations that we need to really talk to improve the uptake of flu shots. So some of our guiding questions that we have are those that are recommended or required to be vaccinated. Are they being vaccinated? And if not, how many? What's the percentage? And then with the new ACIP guidelines of those new recommended, how many are actually getting flu shots? Because that age group is from 6 months on up. and if there are any differences between the newly recommended and the previously recommended. We wanted to know that as well. We contracted with our contractor, Deloitte and Zogby, so Sarah Godby is going to be talking about the actual survey itself.
Thank you, Dr. Marshall. As she alluded to, this was a survey of flu vaccination in general and as well as flu prevalence within this population. And this analysis that we're talking about this morning is just one aspect of the overall survey. So to answer our research questions, we did a phone-based survey of about 10,000 TRICARE beneficiaries. This was a simple random survey, which is a beautiful thing when you're going to analyze. We collected data at two points in the flu season, one toward the beginning, so mid to late November, did 5,000 interviews there, the response rate you see there, and then also at the end of the flu season, at the end of March. Overall, you can see the demographics there. We had an overrepresentation of active duty participants, and so we did some weighting. A couple other things to point out there is just that nearly half of the respondents were between that 25 to 44 category, so a pretty young audience. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the overall findings of the survey and then talk about the specific research questions to this study. So overall, we found that about 58% of respondents were vaccinated by that March date. To give you a little bit more detail, it was not a follow-up study. We did two separate samples between November and March. These were not the same people. But 58% by the end of the flu season. We also asked some questions of people who not only had not been vaccinated, but who did not intend to be vaccinated, to kind of get some information about why they weren't intending to be vaccinated. And you can see here about 42% said they didn't think that they needed the vaccine. And some of the qualitative open-ended questions, it came out that either they thought that they'd never had the flu, they thought that they were pretty healthy, they weren't out in the public much, and so they just didn't think that they needed to get it. About 11% were concerned about side effects, and then we had this other category, which was about 20%, and the most common responses there were that either they had gotten sick after they'd been vaccinated in the past, or they'd seen somebody else get sick, and so they were avoiding it for that reason. We also, some of the most significant differences we found in the vaccination levels was by the beneficiary group, and you can see that nearly 90% of active duty personnel had been vaccinated, and that's because they have to. And from DOD records, that percentage is actually a bit higher. It's more like 96%. We think that difference was because our phone survey was not reaching deployed personnel, but it's obviously very, very high, which not very many fields do you see that kind of response. So, but some of the lowest was with the dependents of those active duty personnel, with about 39% of those, about half of retirees, and about nearly half of the dependents of retirees. And just one point on retirees, we often think of that category as someone over 65 in the civilian population, but within the military health system, that's actually much lower, that you could even be in your 30s or 40s and be a retiree. It's a much younger audience. So we were interested overall in vaccination, but we were also interested in the groups that were required to be vaccinated, what their rates were like, and then also that were within the formerly recommended group. So according to DOD guidelines, active duty are required. We already mentioned the 88% there. Also, healthcare workers and providers are required, and we were finding about 76 and 74% of those were vaccinated. In terms of the groups that were recommended previously, by the ACIP guidelines were those who are high risk because of a chronic condition that they have, or that they were also another part of that guideline is if you're over 50. And then part of the high risk is also pregnant women. And so you can see that 64% for both chronic conditions and those over 50 were vaccinated, and 43% of pregnant women. And as Dr. Marshall mentioned, there was a new policy guidelines this year suggesting that everyone over 6 months be vaccinated. And so we were interested to see how much of the TRICARE population of these respondents fit into that new guideline that hadn't been there in the past, thinking that they were going to be a different group in terms of behavior and attitudes. So of our sample, about 14% were that this was the first year that they were being recommended to have the vaccine by these guidelines. And this number would be a little bit different, except for that we also excluded active duty and healthcare personnel because they are required by DOD to be vaccinated. You can see that the biggest groups are the dependents, 35% of the active duty dependents and 33% of the retired dependents are making up that group. You can also see that there is quite a big difference between the vaccination levels of these groups, with, again, the active duty dependents being the lowest overall, but especially those who are in this recommended group for the first time. Only a quarter of those were vaccinated this flu season. We wanted to look a little bit at the differences between these groups to see if to help guide some policy and communication campaigns. One thing that we found that we thought was interesting was where this group got their information. You can see from this graph that they were more likely to get their information from TV, from the internet, and from family members. And less likely to get their information, their flu information, from their healthcare provider. They also were more likely to believe that they didn't need to be vaccinated. You can see the differences there, but generally 10 to 15%. This is a bit of a busy chart, but I'm going to summarize it for you. We asked them a series of questions to kind of try to put them into categories to understand why it was that they weren't being vaccinated and what factors were important to them in their vaccination behavior. So we asked them if what the impact on their life would be if they were to get the flu, how likely they thought they would be to get the flu this year, if the vaccine was worth the effort, if it would protect them, and if they thought it was safe. So these percentages are for the first category, whether they thought that it would be a serious or negative impact, also whether how likely they thought they would be, and then whether they agreed or strongly agreed with those bottom three. And you can see that in nearly all of these categories, there is a difference between the groups that are in the recommended category for the first time versus those who have been in the past. And some of them rather significant, but overall the trends or the patterns are basically the same. And what we can see here is that within the active duty dependents, that they were the ones who were most likely to say that getting the flu would have the biggest impact on their life. They also generally were the ones who said that they were the most likely to get the flu. But you can see that they had a pretty low trust of the flu, of whether it was worth the effort, if it was actually going to work, and if it was safe to get. Whereas the retirees were pretty low in impact and likelihood to get it, but higher in trust, in trusting the vaccine. And then the retired dependents were kind of medium in the impact and likelihood, and kind of medium in the trust, so kind of that medium category. One other thing that we found in the overall findings, but specifically with these groups, is the role of providers in vaccination. We found that those who are in this new category were less likely to say that their healthcare provider had recommended that they be vaccinated Overall, it was the difference between 36 and 47%, but you can see how that varies among these different beneficiary categories, with the active duty dependents being the least likely to be recommended by their healthcare provider at 28% there. Importantly, though, we asked those whose doctor had not recommended vaccination, if they were, if their healthcare provider were to recommend it, would they be vaccinated? And nearly 60% said that they would. So this is an important finding for us in developing policy and thinking about the role. Though some of the presentations earlier definitely have me thinking about that. So to wrap up, I'll let Dr. Marshall come back up to help answer questions and to talk a little bit more about this.
Okay, so we were excited. You know, all in all, looking at all of our rates, about 59% of our patients, I think it was 56%, are getting the recommended vaccinations that they need to have. And I know that the old Healthy People 2010 stated that 60% was the target for flu shots. I think now, for the 2020, it's up to 90% that they want to have flu shots. And so we're pretty happy about that. The part that we're concerned about is the active duty dependents being about 25% stating that they had the flu shot. And that's a target that we will take back to the Department of Defense and let them know. And we have, and we're looking at ways to target them to say, really, your health is extremely important to us. Many times when we look at the active duty, they're the war fighters, but the problem is if you have a sick spouse at home, sick children at home, it's going to have an impact on the whole family. So we've talked to DOD about that. And I think what we really found out from this is that, I don't think Sarah mentioned this, but one of the questions talked about trust with the physician. 99% of our patients said that they trust the patient's recommendation. And the other part, I think it was 59%, said that if the physician recommended them to have a flu shot, that they certainly would have had one. So I think that that's kind of the golden nugget out of this. And I know you both had speakers earlier spoke about guidelines and patients following guidelines and how guidelines can perhaps, recommendations can have an impact on patients' behavior. And so the groups that we would certainly recommend to target would be pregnant women, the newly recommended active duty dependents, and also talking to the providers, reminding them that with their recommendations, patients will usually go ahead and comply with the flu shot recommendations.
Okay.